You're listening to The Cat Business Show, and I'm Kat. In today's show, I enjoy a coffee with Rob Whitwood, Managing Director at Inspired Change, a consultancy specialising in cash flow and financial management. Rob is not only passionate about supporting businesses to grow, but also about community projects, and shares with me the role of his initiative Inspired Youth and about a new academy he's launching soon. Rob, welcome to the show. It's so nice to see you again.
Thank you.
Now, it's a while since I saw you.
Yes.
It's got to probably be about, 5 years, I think.
Yeah, 5 or 6 years, yeah.
Which is, I would say, halfway through the journey of Inspired Change,
yes.
By the sound of it.
Yes.
For the listeners, do you want to just explain what Inspired Change is? Because it's a fabulous concept.
Yes, so Inspired Change is about helping organisations and executives within organisations that are going through either a period of change in terms of their business or personally, or they feel like their organisation has got into difficulties and they need some external advice and support around that. Most people that get introduced to us as an organisation and to me are people that know the organisation and me, and know how I help people and the way in which I help people. So huge amount of work that we do is word of mouth and recommendations. And that's a nice place to be, because you kind of go in and you're not really trying to hard sell. You're already focused on how you can help, which is a lovely place to be.
Yeah, and everybody needs a little bit of help, don't
yes.
they, really?
Yeah.
It's whether they recognise that or not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, most assignments that I would start off with, you are doing what they say they want help with, but knowing that actually they need different kind of help. And that takes time to maybe deliver the immediate need, but then it's quite obvious as you build that relationship that you can play in, actually this is where you need help. And more often that help is over a longer period of time, and maybe involves other people as well. So you kind of address the urgent need, and then start to explore, you know, what the longer term growth looks like.
So would it be a business that approached you, or would it be an individual? What's the kind of scenarios that you work with?
Typically it will be a senior person within an organisation that has reached out to their own network, be that a personal social network or a business network like a bank or an accountant or solicitor, and they're looking for help with a situation that they've been trying to deal with. So that personal introduction is then made to me through a variety of different media, and it normally involves me going along and having a chat either in a social setting or within the business. More often than not, initially it's in a social setting away from the organisation, and it's basically an opportunity for them to explain what they see the problem is and the challenge, and therefore while you're listening you already need to be thinking of initial solutions that you could play back during that conversation to say, well, okay, if you're here, this is some of the things that you can consider to get you out of where you are at the moment. So it's thinking and listening at the same time, which
yeah.
is hard.
It is quite hard, actually, yeah. isn't it? Yeah, because you're not totally necessarily focused on what they're saying at the time, are you?
No, and you need to come over as if you're 100% paying attention, when actually in the back of your head you're very quickly processing, right, how do I take this person on a journey to help them understand how they can get out of where they are.
Yeah.
And quite often I will not play into that conversation how I can help. It will be just, here is a solution to the situation you're in, and I can help you with some of that, as opposed to, well, if I come in I could do this and this for you. So I always try and leave the person in a position where they feel they're in control, they have a choice, and they don't feel pressured to do anything. Could I be more successful if I was hard selling? Maybe. But, you know, I look at what the last 5 years has been and I probably couldn't physically do any more if I could. So that tells me that I've probably got it as right as I need to at the moment.
Yeah. And the interesting thing there is that it's about helping people, isn't it? So
yes.
So really there's no sort of sales involved, is there? Because they need the help in the first place.
No.
I suppose it's whether they recognise
yeah.
the solutions you offer as being...
A lot of people that I help are either, say, directors or business owners. Some of them have got incredible wealth, and have gained or could gain more wealth as a result of me working with them. And to be honest, having had a background in finance where you see people on very high salaries or dividends and stuff. They're just numbers to me. So I focus very much on the person and helping them in a way that's going to get them to their goal. I take my satisfaction from that. If they're in a position of wealth, they're probably because they've earned it. And if I can help unlock a bit more of that, then that's quite satisfying. So I don't tend to get jealous of people's situations. And more often than not, they've ended up where they are because of a lack of experience or a set of circumstances. So, you know, if you can help them get over that, then that's a nice place to be. They're more likely to recommend you to someone else as well. Mm. And that's a nice feeling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So what kind of problems would they be, you know, that you're in the business and you're having a chat with them, and quite quickly you can probably assess what's going on. What sort of things is normally
I can
going?
Give you a couple of examples. So one example is I was already working with a business who had a relationship with another business owner, and over the course of 3 or 4 months had got themselves into financial difficulties and realised that they weren't going to be able to pay their staff at the end of the month, which was about 3 weeks away. And the only way to get around that was to borrow money from the bank that were currently saying no. So I literally turned up in the morning and reviewed where the company was and the situation they were in. And basically it turned out that if they could borrow only a small amount of money from the bank for 48 hours, it was sufficient enough for them to navigate the situation they were in. So by the afternoon, we'd created a series of presentations for the bank. The bank came in 2 days later and knew me because of my contacts and knew of my reputation to help them. Sat with the business owner and explained what was happening. The bank were more than happy to extend an overdraft for 48 hours. And then I then stayed in contact with the business for about another 7 days over the next 3 months. And they returned to profitability because they got over that issue, and then went on and grew and prospered. If I hadn't have gone in and helped, the bank probably wouldn't have supported them, and they might have been in a situation where they had to close, and that would have resulted in about 15 people losing their job.
Oh, no.
So, and as I say, that's somewhere where you've got to listen. You know, this business owner had invested his own money, was sleeping in the office. As a result, that was obviously going through difficulties at home. So you can imagine personally the situation that they're going through. So it was nice that everyone kept their jobs, but also that he got his life back and retained his business. That's a great example, isn't it?
I mean, I suspect that's possibly quite not that exact scenario, but it's typical of a lot of businesses who have maybe one small problem that absolutely escalates into something that could cascade into the downfall.
So the reason why they got in that situation in the first place is because they didn't have the right administration in the office. So as a result of that, we created a new admin role, which was only, I think, 16 hours a week. On sort of standard office admin pay, and the person we recruited was then able to keep on top of the records, make sure the payments been made and money was coming in. That meant the business owner, instead of being in the office trying to do it himself, it wasn't his skill set, was out getting new business in and engaging with the clients and building that relationship. So focused very much on what the owner of the business should have been doing, for very little investment back in the office. So again, it's like we get over the short-term issue of getting everyone on board, but then ultimately put things in place. And I think a lot of business owners fall into that trap of thinking, well, if I do it, I'm saving money, as opposed to what's the best value I can bring to myself and the organisation, and get out there and do that and think about, right, how can I get other people to help me? You know, an office admin for 16 hours a week, it was the difference between him keeping his business or losing it. It's a no-brainer, really. So.
It is, isn't it? But you probably wouldn't have seen that solution unless you'd come in at that moment in time, because it's sort of seen the wood for the trees, almost, isn't it?
No, and the other thing is, wouldn't have picked a phone up or done it without the referral from someone who he trusted. And that's a lot of business owners, it is about trust. And therefore having a personal recommendation from someone to say, actually, this person can help you and this is how they've helped me, creates that situation where, because you do have to have a lot of trust and hit the ground running to get out of a situation. Definitely one that's that tight, you know, without that introduction and trust, you wouldn't be able to move as quickly. So yes, it is something that you know it is trying to help them understand. Yes, you have a skill shortfall. That's not a bad thing. It's not a weakness. It's just a reality. We can help you with that, and then we can put things in place to help you going forward.
And having a cool head as well, isn't it? And you know, not panicking under that pressure as well, I guess.
Yeah, and I think having seen a lot of different scenarios in my time and been working in some of those scenarios, you do go through some difficult times, and therefore, you're right. Again, when a business owner thinks they're going to lose everything and their house and impacts on their family, and you know, if they're passionate about the people that work for them, it is very difficult to then see things clearly. As long as you're, you know, when I'm there, I don't have that to contend with. It's right, can I step back and see clearly what the solution needs to be here, and who can we bring in to help with that? So yes, you can. You know, yes, you're in there and you're going to walk away from that situation and not have to deal with the consequence. At the same time, you've got the skills to be able to help them. So it's just focusing on that solution. And to a certain extent, people are willing, when they're in that situation, to listen, which is really helpful. If they don't, then it's very difficult to help them.
So what sort of size businesses would you normally get involved in then? It sounds sort of medium size, from small, all sorts by
different,
the sound of it.
Different sorts. If I'm honest, when I first started, I wanted to help everyone. So I was helping SMEs up to about £5 or £6 million, but I was also helping startup businesses as well. And I got involved in various different initiatives where you could get funding for people to go in and provide advice to startups. I think one of the things that I found is startups is a very difficult area to work in. The problem with startups is there are lots of very good startups, but there are lots of people that I would say have got a skill. That's not a business. And having that conversation with someone who may have built their dreams up to run a business and say, actually, you don't have a business, you have a skill, is very difficult to deliver that message. And then be paid to do that, wherever you get that from, is you know, you have to do a lot, and you know, there are some amazing successes. I had a lady who wanted referred from a bank. She wanted to start, the bank had referred her because she wanted to borrow some money to buy into a partnership in a business where she had an amazing skill, and I met with her because the bank were concerned about her business plan of buying into this partnership. And when I listened to her ideas around her attitude towards customer service, her idea for developing new products and new markets, and also her ambition and drive to succeed, it was quite obvious to me that actually what she needed to do was go in and do it on her own and not buy in. So she was buying into a business that wasn't succeeding. And she could see all the ideas that she was going to bring to it. But my view was that it was going to cost her a lot of money, and she was going to have to take that forward as a partnership, whereas she could probably take half the money and do it on her own. Mm-hmm. She now runs a very successful practice with several employees. She's been going for, I guess, about 8 years now.
Yeah.
So you think that was a 45-minute conversation.
Oh, amazing.
Over a jack of potato.
Oh, that's sometimes all it takes, isn't it?
So I guess I help startup businesses now in a charitable way of giving my time and helping people. I don't do that in an intensive way. You know, if someone comes up to me with an idea, I will give them the time and a coffee and a chat.
Yeah.
I don't actively go out looking for that kind of business, but if someone comes and asks me for help, it's difficult to say no.
Yes, of course, of course. And actually, in that situation you just described there, it was a bit about having her having confidence, wasn't it? To say,
yeah,
you know what,
massively. And again, I think the problem is that when you're a business owner or looking to start a business, or you're a senior director, it's a very lonely place to be. You may have a board or shareholders above you, or that may be you. You've got maybe a management team or directors below you, and then all of the staff. So actually, it's a very lonely place to go and play out, how do I deal with this? So I quite often find myself in a kind of a friend to talk to situation, and then being able to play the advice back in, okay, well, you can consider this, this and this. And I think that is the trouble, is a lot of business owners and CEOs and directors, who do you reach out to? in a forum of trust where you need to open up that things may not be going as well as you'd want them to, but you need to be seen to be confident, in control, and being successful within your industry or your working environment or your company. Mm-hmm. And again, it's the same for people who want to start up business. You know, they may have come from a situation where they've been employed, and maybe they're forced to be in a situation where they're thinking what to do with themselves. Starting your own business is incredibly difficult, very challenging, and you need a very diverse set of skills. But there's some people that have got amazing talent and great proposition, and it's saying actually, yeah. And sometimes it's almost like giving them permission to go and succeed,
yes,
you know, which is a nice feeling, really.
Yeah, so. And then to watch them succeed is even better, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So from what you're describing there, Rob, you've got lots of different scenarios that you could be called into in various different size of businesses in different sectors with different problems. That sounds to me like you have to have quite a few skills yourself.
Yeah, and I would say every assignment that I have been on, I will learn something. I always joke when I go into a new business if I learn something in Excel, because I've been using Excel since I was at university, so a long time. And I've never been on a formal Excel training course, but every company I go in, there'll be someone who has built up a level of expertise and they'll know how to do something I've never seen before. Even the assignment I have at the moment, I've learned something that I didn't know after sort of 20 years of using Excel. But yes, in terms of business, you obviously know finance and accounting because of my background, but I need to have appreciation for HR, IT, marketing, and to a certain extent operations as well, but then every assignment I go into, operations is different. So it could be manufacturing, it could be engineering. At the moment I'm working in a hospice that's dealing with people that are dying. I know nothing about clinical care, but what I do know about is organisation change and managing performance, and it's about giving them those tools because they're the experts in their field. But then I will learn. I've learned about palliative care. You know, I knew very little about it. Now I understand the cycles of what people go through, which is interesting. Yeah. You know.
And I suppose also that actually once you've dealt with one business sector, the issues and the problems may be different in a different sector, but there are skills or problem solving or solutions that you can take from one to the other.
Yeah. So the scenario I'm in at the moment at the hospice, I'm using stuff that I've done in two different organisations. So I did a study on Red Wings Horse Sanctuary 5 years ago. I wrote to them and said I'd love to come and understand a bit about how you work behind the scenes. And I was very lucky that the CEO gave me 2 days to the whole management team. And I interviewed all of them and understood how they worked. And having only worked in a commercial setting where the focus is on about making money and product, to be in a situation where it was about caring for the welfare, changed some of my knowledge and understanding of how organisations operate. I then had another assignment where I was working at the construction college, which was about developing young people and learning. And again, they were set up to achieve a social outcome as opposed to a financial outcome. So when I had the opportunity to go and work in a hospice, I was drawing on both of those in terms of social and caring outcomes as opposed to financial outcomes. Having said that, I've been asked to help with their retail operations. So they've got charity shops and e-commerce platforms, and so they're generating a huge amount of their funds through effectively a retail operation, which is very commercial. So I've been able to bring my commercial experience to help them generate funds through their retail and charity shops, but then also use the social side in terms of the operations.
Yes.
So that's why the assignment is really interesting, because it's a really mixed bag.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? I like the idea that actually, you know, even with a charity, you have to remember that ultimately they're responsible from a financial perspective as well. They can't run themselves as, you know, a lost leader, can they? Otherwise, it wouldn't help their causes.
I think one of the things that I've noticed in definitely with the charities that I've worked and through the social work that I do is there's a massive shift change. You know, austerity has brought a huge impact on the way that a lot of charities were funded. A lot of charities get contracts from public sector to deliver services on behalf of public sector. And they were their whole organisation was geared around the security of those contracts. now those contracts are either being withdrawn or reduced, they're in a situation where they've got to create either commercial income or fundraising income to a volume that they've never had to experience before. So not only do you bring efficiency in terms of how they're working and organise themselves, but you've also not need to make them commercially aware, and how do they build their own brand and market that. And the ones that are getting it right and learning from it, you can see are prospering. But you are aware of very long-standing charities that are now really struggling because they were so geared around a social public contract, and now they're trying to create relationships with the business community. Yeah. and it's very difficult. Yeah. You know, they can't just keep going out with saying, please can you get your checkbook out, because businesses conversely don't have the money. So the investment businesses are looking to make is staff time, and therefore they're not going to just get their checkbook out. They can say, well, we'll give our staff 2 or 3 days a year to come and help you, but we're not going to give you a grand, you know, because again they're already paying for that staff. So that's an easier thing for them to absorb over you know, paying money out, which is cash out of the business. So it's those charities and social organisations that can evolve to that are going to succeed, which is a shame, because some of those charities deliver very valuable services to the community.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, you've got to change, you've got to evolve.
Yeah.
This is where we are now.
So. Yeah, which is what Inspired Change is all about, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And as I say, the charity stuff does interest me, because it is a combination of welfare and supporting the community, but it has got a commercial aspect to it. And again, because, you know, commercial is quite financially driven, they're always looking to make extra money, so they tend to be quite efficient in the way they operate. They just sometimes get themselves into difficulty, whereas the third sector is now having to become more efficient and be more commercial aware. So you have a lot more low-hanging fruit, and you can help really quickly, and there's a willingness for them to learn, because they're very passionate about the subject, but you're taking them right outside their comfort zone. Yeah. In terms of being commercially aware.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some of them find that quite exciting, which is good.
Which is good. That's what you want, really, isn't it? If they find it exciting, that it's a change that's going to happen far easier, isn't it, than trying to grab them by the bootlaces and drag them through.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about Inspired Youth then, really, because that's on the back of this philanthropic approach that you have, I think. Rob.
So about 6 months after I went self-employed, I've always done charity work in my own time, either in the village or, you know, when someone finds out that you're an accountant, you get bugged to be the treasurer of, you know, every group that's going locally. So I've kind of been there and done that. But so when I went self-employed, I thought, right, well, I want to do some community work, but I want to focus on something that is aligned to me and what I want to do. And so I wanted to go back into schools and talk to young people about how I use maths in my job, because the careers advice that I had came from my parents, where if you like finance and maths, you need to go work in a bank or become an accountant. Whereas I feel what I do as a job is quite interesting.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe not as I found those kind of jobs, really. So I created this project to go into a school and get the young people to solve a business challenge and start their own business. And I did that in a school in Yarmouth 8 years ago, and it was really successful, and the school said, oh, you should do more of this. Bearing in mind, I'd never done any youth work before or gone into a school setting. So I started to go out business networking, and I found it quite difficult coming from corporate life to go to a business network and sell me as a consultant. So I started to talk about this project that I'd done in the school, and everyone wanted to talk about it, because that's like, I don't really want to be sold to while I'm at this network, but you sound quite interesting.
Yes.
So if I stick to you, no one will come and sell to me.
Love it.
So within a year, I'd got about 20 people that wanted to get involved, and I found another school, and we did it again, and again, it was really successful. And then the reputation started to grow, and more people wanted to get involved. So I was then getting into a bit of a difficult situation where I was going to see clients on the change side of things, and all they kept saying is, well, I keep hearing about all this work you're doing in education, yet you're here to help me with my business that's struggling. So I was working with a marketing agency at the time, and we took the decision to create a separate brand, which is where Inspired Youth came from. The challenge with that is, once I'd created a separate brand and a separate website that had achieved outcomes and was being marketed, that in itself started to grow really quickly. So I was then in a situation where I'm now trying to manage two animals. And I guess 8 years later, I'm still trying to manage two animals.
Yes. Oh, big challenges. Yeah. But you see, what you're sounding to me, Rob, is that really, you know, here's a man 10 years ago who would never have imagined in a million years he was going to be self-employed to start with. You go down that route, and then you've got two really successful businesses.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like with that entrepreneurial approach you've got, it won't stop there.
No, and I think it probably started at a very young age. So I love gardening, and my granddad taught me horticulture when I was about 10. And I bought my first greenhouse when I was 12, and started to grow and sell plants locally. So by the age of 13, I was earning quite a lot of money out of horticulture.
Excellent.
So I've always had this thing about wanting to run my own business. But being good at maths took me down the line of accountancy. So I've always had this conflict of my career and my job is this, but my passion is this, really. And so now I found myself in a perfect situation where I'm actually doing both, which is great. And so, yes, I'm always looking for the next idea and things up the road. I just need to make sure that I'm keeping going what I've got and building teams to help me keep that going.
Yeah, that's an important point, isn't it, really? Because no doubt, you know, you'll be trying to step outside and look into your own businesses with the same eyes and freshness that you do with other people's. But sometimes that's quite hard, isn't it?
It is, and I would say it's car mechanics car, really.
Yeah.
You know, you do get caught up in spinning your own plates and helping others, and then you do take your eye off the ball and get yourself into a situation where you think, actually, and I quite often get asked when I'm sitting down, because I have my own peer network that I talk to, and they'll say, if Inspired Change come in to do that, what would they say?
Yes.
And I find myself literally taking myself out and going, actually, I would do this, this and this, and they just look back at you and say, well, why aren't you doing that?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But it is difficult, because you just get into that situation where, you know, you are just keeping things going. Going in and seeing someone else's business and telling them what to do is a hell of a lot easier than doing that on your own.
It is. Of course, because also when you're doing your own business and you're working on progressing yourself, actually you're not earning at the same time, are you?
It's no.
Investment.
I think yeah, anyone who's self-employed that delivers services is a massive a balance between delivery and business development and filling the pipeline. If you're out selling your services and earning money, then you're not getting ready to bring the next client in. If you're busy out getting the next client in, you're not earning.
No.
You know, until you get to that point where actually you can be getting the business in and someone else can be doing the delivery, then, you know, until that time, you've got to balance it. So a lot of people in my industry do go through famine and feast, and they don't tend to expand beyond themselves. I guess my problem is I'm always wanting to do more and grow. So I've explored lots of different ways at growing, taking interns on and business partners and various different things. But what I have found with the youth work is that I've been able to create projects and products and services to schools and find someone who can deliver that and keep that going. And I'm now exploring how do I develop the consultancy to basically achieve that same goal, where I can grow my client base, build a pipeline and share the delivery with someone that will allow me to keep that going, which is where the idea of the academy has come in.
Oh, right, now that sounds interesting. I thought that's immediately when you say academy, I think of self-development.
Yes.
And, you know, looking at the bits where you need to improve and
yes.
How can we do that? Is that what you've got in mind?
Yeah, it is, but I think it's trying to explore the delivery in a different way. An academy might not be what it ends up being called, because the minute you say that, the feeling is it's a school or it's a place that you have to go and learn and be taught by someone, and that's not the concept.
Yeah.
So the principle is to take a group of people similar to the ones we've worked in the past and help inspire them through others' expertise and experience, and let people absorb that themselves in the way they want to, and then go and apply it in their own setting how they want to. So they're very much in control and they have the choice. I meet a lot of people that need development and want to be developed, but their traditional way of being developed doesn't work for them.
Yeah.
Just the same as I meet lots of young people in education who could be amazing in say, a self-employed setting or a vocational setting, but put them in an academic setting and they won't succeed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people I've met in business owners and executives are exactly the same. So it's about trying to create that environment for them to learn and develop in a way that is how they need to develop, really.
Right. And how are we going to identify those bits and pieces? Is it something they would identify themselves and
yeah,
then come to
and
you?
And I think it'll probably be similar to the consultancy side. So it'll be a combination of, look, we're already working with you. Can we suggest that you come along and explore this? Or it could be that someone else who's already worked with us or experienced it have said, you know, I really suggest you go along because we've got this out of it. So I very much see that, not to call it a sales process, but the sales process, very much the way that Inspired Change has grown through reputation and case studies and, you know, word of mouth, rather than, you know, here's a glossy brochure and this is what you'll get out of it and come along and be part of it. And I think because of that, you know, I find when I'm talking about fees for my consultancy, that quite often doesn't come into the conversation until right at the very end, because you're already exploring the outcomes that can be achieved, which far outweigh what the cost is going to be. And I think it'll be the same for the academy. It won't be, well, how much is it going to cost for me to come to that? It's, I feel the need, I can see the value, and if I have to pay something for that, then that's part of being in business.
Yes, so, yeah. And it's also a lonely world being in business, isn't it? And certainly the world of consultancy, when you're essentially on your own, it can be lonely. So that networking sounds quite important.
Yeah, and I think, as I say, being a business owner or being a CEO or senior person is lonely, because you've either got shareholders above you, or maybe you own the business. You've got your direct reports, your directors, and your people in your company. You don't want to show weakness in front of them in terms of not knowing what to do or how to deal with certain situations. But you do need someone to talk to and to bounce ideas off and play scenarios through and gain that knowledge and experience. And you know, if you go on a learning management training course, it is very much one-way communication in terms of I'm going to tell you content. Whereas what I want to achieve is something where, you know, content is shared and people absorb what's relevant to them and then can talk about how they can apply it. But it is about creating that support peer network, and hopefully it will continue outside whatever we set up. That those relationships will continue, because again, my experience definitely working in Norfolk is very close business community, and there's always a willingness to support and share, and it's working alongside what works locally as well.
Of course, yeah. And when's this all going to be going off then? Come on, tell me when. Have we had a launch date yet?
Yeah, I think the problem is I'm always starting something yesterday, but I have to respect the fact that. Inspired Change, I think, took me about 3 or 4 weeks to get started. Inspired Youth was very quick. This, I'm taking my time because I really want to understand how it's going to work and how it's going to grow, so that I can make sure that it... I've made a lot of mistakes in the past, and I would like this to build up and keep growing slowly rather than rush into something, which is what I tend to do, and then learn very quickly the hard way. So.
And do something that you're telling your clients not to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So if someone wants to get hold of you then, Rob, where would they find you?
Oh, lots of different places. I would be lying if I said I didn't use social media quite a lot, so... LinkedIn is something that I really enjoy using. I watch my feed quite a lot. I help a lot of people through LinkedIn. It's a tool that I find, once you're connected with someone, no matter where you are or they are, in terms of whatever they're working on, their profile goes with them. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to find people. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously easy to get connected and have conversations through the messenger. I quite often I get approached a lot for people looking for jobs, ironically. And then when I see jobs come up, I try and match people. So I use it quite a lot. I'm also on Twitter. I don't use that so much, but it's another platform that I've used.
So LinkedIn's the platform really for you. That's where to go.
And I do watch what people do and what they write and content, and I try and comment and as much as possible and share stuff because I know that I've got a reasonable following. It's not massive, but it's quite big, and I know the people that I have on there trust me as a person, and therefore if I share content, they'll know it's of value. That's probably the easiest way.
Brilliant. Oh, well, Rob, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for telling me your story. It sounds really great. The Academy sounds like it's going to fly as well.
Yes, I hope so.
It's watch that space kind of thing,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is,
So we'll have another conversation about that when it's up and running, I think.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Cat Business Show. For more information about me, my business school, and to listen to past shows, please visit cat.uk.com. Bye for now.